welcome back to the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. This is actually going to be a little bit of a different episode than what we normally have. It's a roundtable that I recorded with the rest of my Blog Talk Radio Basketball Podcast brethren. That includes hosting Adam Stenko, who does a great job with some really interesting guests, including Bruce Frazier recently from the Warriors, Sonny Vaccaro, who was fantastic, really one of the guys who started the modern sneaker culture with Michael Jordan at Nike, and then was very involved in youth basketball for a while. Chris Sheridan, who you might recall was the first one to report that LeBron James was returning to Cleveland. And Danny LaRue, of course, who you know is a frequent co-host, who we're looking forward to having back very shortly once the season starts. And Coach Nick Houselman from B-Ball Breakdown, who also has a great podcast that I've appeared on several times. It's a little bit more of a roundtable season preview type of thing, so kind of different, but give you a chance to check out some of the other great hosts that we have talking about basketball on the BTR network. Enjoy.
A special edition podcast for Blog Talk Radio. Some of the brightest minds in NBA analysis have composed an impressive roundtable to preview the NBA season. And then there's me. I'm Adam Stenko, host of the Great Point Podcast. My Twitter handle is at NaismithLives. And joining me on the panel, Chris Sheridan, publisher and editor-in-chief of SheridanHoops.com and host of the Sheridan Hoops radio podcast. Chris, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Adam.
Nate Duncan, NBA expert, writer at The Cauldron, and host of the Dunked On podcast. His Twitter handle is at NateDuncanNBA. Nate, glad to have you.
Good to be here, gentlemen.
Danny LaRue, sports writer and podcast host for Real GM, salary cap CBA writer for Sporting News, lead writer for Warriors World, and curator of Real GM CBA Encyclopedia. Danny LaRue's Twitter handle is at Danny LaRue. Danny, glad to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, it's Coach Nick Houselman, NBA breakdown expert and host of the B-Ball Breakdown podcast. His Twitter handle is at B-Ball Breakdown. Coach Nick, good to have you on.
Thanks. As we say in these parts, I am in.
Awesome. Well, we already have some big breaking NBA news to get to. We've got a ton of stuff. We'll talk expectations in both conferences, some award predictions, and then some other things that people are taking as gospel. And I want to see if you guys think these things are true. But first, we have to start out with the biggest news in the NBA, and that's Jimmer Fredette getting waived by the Spurs. no, it's Tristan Thompson, 5 years, $82 million. Chris Sheridan, what can you tell us about this deal and your thoughts on this?
Look, props to Rich Paul, the agent, for getting Tristan Thompson that kind of money. You know, to take it this far, all the way to October 21st, when the deal gets done, after having his guy out there all summer as a restricted free agent who didn't get any offer sheets, and then who's a guy who might not play that many minutes this year, to get him that close to the max, that's only about $8 million shy of the max. That's a hell of a job on his part, and it shows also that the Cavs are willing to do what it takes to keep LeBron James happy, even if it costs them a boatload of Dan Gilbert's dollars in luxury tax payments. But Rich Paul, you know, I've been one of his harshest critics all summer. Like, he's doing his guy a big disservice here, because as nice of an NBA Finals as Tristan Thompson had, you know, with all the offensive rebounds he grabbed, he didn't put any of those offensive rebounds back. He kicked them out and started new possessions. The guy can't score from outside of 5 feet. He can't hit a foul shot. He's about as much of a one-trick pony as there's been in the NBA since Dennis Rodman, and he's not the player that Dennis Rodman was. For him to be seeking a max deal was you know, out of the realm of good sense, just as far as I saw it. But, you know, Rich Paul stuck to his guns, kept holding out for a high number. And to get that guy 5 years and $82 million is a heck of a deal, because, I mean, let's face it. Look, if Anderson Varejao is back this year, and if he stays healthy and plays 82 games, they're going to use him more than Tristan Thompson. And they also brought in Sasha Kohn, the 30-year-old rookie from Russia, who David Blatt had coached when he was overseas. And Sasha Kohn may very well be the backup behind Timofey Mozgov at center. You know, Tristan Thompson's not that great of a defender, you know, maybe a little more at the four than he is at the five. But Sasha Kohn might be the guy getting the backup minutes at the five. So if you have Varejao and Kohn as your two primary big backups, where does Tristan Thompson get his minutes? And, you know, he may not get them, even though he played 82 games last year. he might not see 82 games this season because he's just so low on the depth chart. So, you know, great money. Congratulations to Tristan Thompson for getting paid. Congratulations to Rich Paul for getting his client that much money. But I'm not a big Tristan Thompson fan as far as being a multi-skilled player, and I don't think that many people in the NBA are. So it's certainly an interesting piece of news that the Cavs, I think Cavs ownership and Cavs leadership caved on this one, because $82 million over 5 years for a guy with that limited amount of offensive ability is, I think, a vast overreach in terms of paying him what he's worth.
Nate Duncan, you're an NBA cap expert. What did you think about the financials on this deal?
You know, it's interesting. I always like to think of deals in terms of internal leverage and external leverage. The external leverage that Tristan Thompson had wasn't that much, right? As Chris noted, he couldn't get an offer sheet for the amount he was seeking somewhere else. On the open market, he probably isn't worth this deal, even the 5 years, $82 million, not to mention the max that they were seeking. But internal leverage is also important, and the Cavs really need him. I respectfully disagree with Chris on what is important to the team. He's probably their best defensive big man when you consider his ability to switch. That was something that was really important in that Hawks series where they totally shut down the Hawks. Also against the Bulls, he was really effective defensively. And his offensive rebounding obviously is important. He does have some limitations. He's not a max player in a vacuum, but I think that although they may not have even needed him to get to the finals, they weren't going to win the NBA championship without him and what he brings defensively, because they have other guys on defense who just aren't as versatile as he is. So I think it was a really important re-signing. And granted, it was only $2 million more than what their offer really was on the first day of free agency. So I actually think the Cavs kind of won this one ultimately, and that this extra $2 million was kind of just a way for them to save face. But Rich Paul didn't miscalculate either, because he let the qualifying offer expire. People thought they would take their offer off the table, and they obviously did not.
Danny, anything to add to what Nate just said there?
The only thing I'll mention is the idea of replacement. Where the Cavs were kind of situationally is that they had so much money committed to LeBron and Love and Kyrie and Anderson Varejao that they couldn't really go into the open market this year or next year to get a replacement. So not only are they getting somebody who fits with both Love and Mozgov imperfectly at points, but, you know, as well as they could expect, was that with their given situation, they couldn't have functionally replaced him. So, yeah, they are spending some more of Dan Gilbert's money, but they're not losing really any flexibility other than that. And it is also interesting that he ended up settling on five. It's reported, I think Brian Windhorst said this, that it's 5 years, no options. And that's compelling, because a lot of guys have tried to get fifth-year player options or something like that. And so maybe that's what he wanted generally, or maybe the Cavs, that was kind of their concession in that way, is that he didn't get what Love got with the fifth year.
And Coach Nick, just from a playing perspective, in terms of the chemistry that Chris was alluding to before, I mean, there's been questions about whether Tristan Thompson can coexist with Kevin Love. How do you see it playing out now that we know that Thompson's under contract?
Well, it's funny, because from a coaching perspective, I would love this kind of player who really hustles and creates a lot of extra possessions, which are really valuable, especially deep in the playoffs. But I had been having, I had a hard line all summer saying he's simply not worth a max. He's not worth what, you know, Draymond Green is going to get paid for what he does for that team. So, however, you know, listening to how Nate described it, I'd be worried if he was going to try and sell me some beachfront property in Alaska, because I might actually buy it then too, the way he phrased it, because he, you know, there is a real value there to a guy, especially when you have, you know, I like to assume that players won't get injured. You know, I know that people have histories, and some of them, like Varejao, you know, goes down all the time, but I don't know. He looked fine to me in the preseason. And if he can play the way he would normally do, they wouldn't even need Tristan Thompson at all, in my opinion. So, you know, I do know he gives him a little bit more versatility. He can guard smaller guys in the perimeter on switches, and that's great. But again, I'm just scratching my head. It's hard to imagine him worth even as much money as they ended up paying him.
Chris, I want to go back to you. We saw what LeBron did in the finals without Kyrie Irving, without Kevin Love, and now you go to a situation in which those guys are back entering this season, that roster seems to be loaded. What are your expectations for LeBron? And you were the guy that called it, Chris, initially, LeBron going back to Cleveland. What are your expectations for LeBron this season with this Cavs roster?
this is the start of not one, not two, not three. This team is going to win a championship, and they're rightfully the favorites to win the championship. Nobody in the East who can play with them got better. The Hawks got worse. I think maybe the Heat got a little bit better if they stay healthy because they got the steal of the draft in Justice Winslow, but their health, again, is a huge question mark. Dwayne Wade, the over-under on him games played is going to be probably somewhere around 60. But the Cavs should be able to sail through the East, and then they're going to play somebody coming out of the West that has, gone through the wars, because there's 9-10 good teams out of in the West, and as we saw last year in the playoffs, it didn't really matter where they were grouped, 1 through 8. There were 8 good teams in the playoffs in the West, whereas in the East you had the Celtics in there. Just the disparity in strength between the conferences is so acute. The Cavs are coming out. They're coming out this year. They're coming out next year. They're coming out the year after that. We'll go to Cleveland every June, guys. That's the way it's going to be covering the NBA for the next couple of years. So my expectation is that it's time to win a championship. This team made it that far last year, without Kyrie and without Kevin being available throughout the entire playoffs. And they had to rely on Matthew Dellavedova, and we saw that, he's a 10-minute player. He's not a 42-minute player. But this year they brought in Mo Williams, and, that's a significant upgrade at the backup point guard position. They didn't lose any major pieces. They've got Varejao back, and, like one of the guests said, he's looked good in the preseason. They brought Richard Jefferson in. They got rid of some of their deadwood from last year, the Mike Millers and the Kendrick Perkins of the world. This team is built with a lot of depth at every single position. They should be able to better withstand injuries than they did last year. And even though they had significant ones last year, they made it all the way to the NBA Finals. There's no excuse for them not winning the championship, other than if they're outplayed by a better team. And with the strength of so many teams out West, they could very well run into a better team, but they should be the fresher team come the NBA Finals.
Okay, with that being said, Danny LaRue, who is the biggest challenger to the Cavs in the Eastern Conference?
I think it's Chicago. It depends with all these teams. We're going to have to say if they stay healthy, but assuming that for all the teams, because what Chicago brings is they have depth in the front court, they have talent in the front court, even if they make another move and kind of clear somebody out. But also they have a guy who can defend LeBron pretty well in Jimmy Butler. So it will take Derrick Rose being close to Derrick Rose to make them at their best, but I think they're the best challenge either way because they have ways of mitigating some of the best things Cleveland can do, and they have strengths of their own.
Nate Duncan, how about you?
Yeah, I think the Bulls still have the highest upside of this group. They probably have the most talent in the aggregate. Maybe you could throw Miami into that as well. But you don't necessarily trust that they are going to be healthy. I still think, though, that my prediction is during the regular season, the Cavs will not get the number one seed just because of how many injuries they have right now. With Kyrie and Mon Shumpert, there's talk that neither of those guys will be back before the new year. And they have plenty of other guys who are kind of injury risk as well. I think they're going to try to throttle down LeBron's minutes. So although it's hard to predict which team is going to do better during the regular season, I think some of them on the Raptors, Wizards, Heat, Bulls, among that group is going to finish a few games ahead of Cleveland, but then just lose to them in the playoffs. However, I would make Cleveland a significant underdog against whoever comes out of the West, partially health-related and partially related to the fact that they haven't proven they can defend at an elite level with Kevin Love there yet.
All right, so we're hearing Bulls and we're hearing Cavs. Coach Nick, Raptors, Heat, Wizards, Hawks, any of those teams stand out as a major contender to you?
The Bulls, the improvement they made, just to talk about them for one second, is the coaching. And what they're doing on offense that we broke down is much more exciting and much more threatening to other teams. I think the biggest issue Hoiberg is going to have is who to play with whom. And that's always probably the hardest thing to do as a coach. The thing that I see across the rest of the East, I know that Lowry looks better. He's in better shape, and he's been really killing it in the preseason. I'm still not sold on what they do with Dwayne Casey. But I do feel like the Wizards might have a shot. They've sort of opened up their offense a little bit more and made it, a little bit more free-form so that those guys can really create off the air on their own. And I think that that's going to be an interesting threat because they have a lot of different pieces, and they have a lot of talent in different spots. And, Otto Porter – started to show that maybe the old man Paul Pierce version they had isn't, you know, going to hurt them by him leaving to the Clippers. So I don't know. I would keep my eye on the Wizards for a little while there to see, because, you know, if they could stay a little healthy as well, then, you know, they have some really terrific players.
Now, you look around the rest of the Eastern Conference, and you got the Bucks, the Pacers, Celtics, Nets, Hornets, Magic, Knicks, Pistons. It seems like all of those rosters are either young or they're a hodgepodge of unique players. Intriguing, you know, very, very loosely used term there to describe those rosters. Chris, any of those teams stand out to you as a team that's really headed in the right direction?
Well, headed in the right direction, sure. Headed toward contending for the Eastern Conference title, no. I wouldn't say any of them are even close. But, you know, I really like the Milwaukee Bucks. The pickup of Greg Monroe was huge. You know, this was a team that was using Ersin Ilyasova last year at the four. They were able to dump him on Detroit, and they were able to pick up Greg Monroe. Plus, they got Jabari Parker coming back. They were able to keep Chris Middleton. I like the pickup of Grievous Vasquez as a backup point guard. He may be actually a better player than Michael Carter Williams. There's no arguing with what Jason Kidd did last year. He turned a 15-win team into a playoff team. And so, you know, the sky's kind of the limit there with what they've built in terms of having a really great young core and probably a future all-star in the Greek Freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think the Milwaukee Bucks can surprise a lot of people this season, kind of maybe not to the same degree that the Atlanta Hawks did last year, where they won 60 games and had the best record in the Eastern Conference. But the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be a damn good team, and not a lot of people are talking about them.
Danny LaRue, I know recently on Twitter you've been discussing the Boston Celtics and their current situation. What are your expectations for the Celtics this year?
I think that they'll be the type of team that can win a lot of games. I don't think that they'll be particularly relevant in the postseason, but I feel pretty confident that they'll get there. What suits them so well is not only do they have a strong coach in Brad Stevens, but they have a lot of talent. And as Ian Levy wrote today, the nice thing about them is they won't play any bad players. So their rotation is deep in that sense. And that, especially in the current Eastern Conference, that can get you a long way. It won't get you a lot of playoff series wins, but you can get a lot of regular season wins. And I don't see any shame in that. That's, you know, that's a meaningful accomplishment for a team that has, you know, struggled for relevance to a degree since they lost their previous core.
And Nate, how about you? For those teams that aren't necessarily contending in the East, any of those individual teams stand out to you as one you're going to keep an eye on this year, either for the good or for the bad?
You mentioned teams that are headed in the right direction. I would say that most of the East falls into that category, other than the Nets, Hornets, and Knicks. The Nets obviously gave up draft picks to the Celtics, either swap rights or unprotected picks over the next 3 years in the KG Paul Pierce trade. And they're going to have cap space this summer, but come play with Brook Lopez and Thaddeus Young, it's probably not going to be incredibly persuasive to what's a weak free agent class anyway. The Hornets had some chances to draft high upside players back when they were bad. And instead of going with Nerlens Noel or Andre Drummond, they went with kind of lower upside guys in Zeller and MKG. They've made some moves recently as well that are kind of just chasing the eighth seed type of moves. They traded their number 9 pick last year, Noah Vonleh, to get Nikola Batum. And now that MKG is out for the year, they're probably not going to make the playoffs anyway, and they're going to have to either let Batum go or massively overpay to keep him. And then the Knicks as well, I thought that they could have done better with the Porzingis pick. I don't think he has quite the upside that everyone else thinks, and Emmanuel Mudiay would have been a much better pick there as someone who I think can be a future star. I think Porzingis kind of tops out more as kind of a nice starter, because I don't think he has the individual ball skills to really be a great scorer. So I think that those teams don't really have a great path to getting back to relevance, but I like what most of the rest of the East is doing.
Coach Nick, anything you want to add about the Eastern Conference teams that might not be necessarily contending?
Well, you know, I'm anxious to see the Knicks because, you know, they got a lot of tourists, is what we call it in the trade, for how they ran their offense. And obviously, I'm a triangle offense coach. And, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, a little bit more of what a modern version of the offense looks like when they actually have NBA players running it. So I suspect that they're going to be better and actually be maybe better than people think. So that's the one thing I'm interested in looking at. And then Orlando with the kind of team, when I watched them last year, I would just scratch my head and think, you know, why aren't they better than they are? And so it's possible that maybe they kind of start to figure it out and start knocking on the door and really becoming a problem, you know, for other teams. And that would be the other team I'd watch for.
I would just weigh in with one other team to keep an eye on is the team that might have the rookie of the year, Stanley Johnson, and that's the Detroit Pistons. You know, Stan Van Gundy has turned over this roster about 80% since he came in, and that's a heck of a turnover in the space of 1 year. They're a completely different team than what they started, you know, roster-wise and skill-wise than what they started last year with. Stan's got a lot of guys coming off the bench who can shoot the three ball, and we remember how good his Orlando teams were when they had a dominant big man inside and a bunch of guys who could space the floor outside and bang down threes. They were able to keep Reggie Jackson. They've got to figure out what they're going to do with Brandon Jennings, but he's not a bad trade candidate around the deadline. But, you know, Andre Drummond is a heck of a player. Andre Drummond's probably the best center that people don't give credit to for being a great center, and he is a great center. Now, is he as good as Dwight Howard? No, but his numbers last year compared to Dwight's were pretty much equivalent. They picked up Marcus Morris from the Suns for nothing. And like I said, Stanley Johnson, here's a kid who he started all 4 years at Modern Day High School in L.A., and all 4 years they won the state championship. He was the best player on Arizona's last year. And when the NBA brought in all the rookies this year for the rookie transition program, they polled them and they asked them, hey, among your peers, who do you think is going to win rookie of the year? And the guy who was picked was Stanley Johnson. So keep an eye on the Pistons. There's definitely a lot of room for them to move up and not a lot of good competition for them to overtake. I think they're a sleeper team for being someone, you know, a team that can go maybe to the sixth or even the five seed in the East.
Well, I'm with you. I'm a big Stanley Johnson fan. NBA body, even though he was just a freshman last year, Sean Miller taught him how to play defense. He can score from outside, and he just bullies people inside. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. Nate Duncan, as we move over to the Western Conference now, unlike the East, in which we have a clear favorite, some contenders, and then a whole bunch of teams you know aren't going to be anywhere near the top of the pack, the West is just simply loaded. I mean, it's hard to figure out who's going to even be in the playoffs and then who's going to be your one seed. The one and five seeds could be separated just by a small number of games. We know what the Warriors did last year, but the Spurs adding LaMarcus Aldridge and David West, you've got the Rockets adding Ty Lawson, the Clippers are deeper and DeAndre Jordan returns to them. So Nate, who do you think wins the Western Conference?
Wait, so the team that
last year isn't the clear favorite to you?
You tell me. You think so?
I think they are. I think that, you know, they haven't had the greatest preseason in the world, but this team was awesome last year. And they won 67 games, had, you know, one of the few teams in NBA history to have a 10-plus point differential, number two in offense, number one in defense by points per possession last year. They're bringing everyone back. Really, everyone should probably be better on this team, with the exception of Bogut and Iguodala, considering where they're at in their careers age-wise. So, yeah, I think that they are the clear favorite. These other teams have put together some really nice pieces, and I do think it's going to be a dogfight. I don't think they're going to be, you know, just running away with it necessarily like last year, but they have to be the favorites until proven otherwise, because they won 67 games last year, and these other teams could theoretically get to that level, but they haven't yet, and we know that this team can get to that level.
Danny LaRue, you agree with that?
I do. I think especially when we're talking about the Western Conference, what the Warriors did last year can't be discounted. Not only did they win 67 games, but they did it in a dominant way. They outscored opponents by double digits. Their margin was over 10, and that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, they're a lock to walk into the title or anything, but they are the favorites, and while I like a lot of the other teams, and while those teams can be dangerous in a seven-game series, especially when we're talking about the idea of who's going to end up with the one seed, while we can't guarantee health, we can't guarantee anything like that, I think the Warriors are the favorite for that by a margin, and then each individual series, we're going to kind of have to take it as they come. But the important lesson here for me with the West is getting in is fine, but you want to make sure that you're right when you get into it, because almost every team, if not every team, is going to have a tough series in every round. So you need to make sure that you're physically ready for that, as opposed to battling for the 3 seed versus the 6 or something like that. You just want to make sure that you're right when you get in, because you're going to be in for a war every single round.
Chris, how about for you?
Look, there's no arguing with Golden State's 67 wins last year and their proficiency from 3-point range, and you know they exploit the best weapon in the NBA, which is the 3-point shot. And you know I like the move they made picking up Jason Thompson from Philadelphia for Gerald Wallace, who the Sixers cut. I can't understand that one from the Sixers' point of view. But Jason Thompson, look, he was a guy who played center in college. He was an undersized center in college, so he can play the 5 spot. As well as the 4 spot in the NBA, and I think he's a better player than Festus Ezeli, and he's a nice insurance policy in case Bogut gets hurt, for when Bogut gets hurt. They should definitely be considered the favorite. What makes me wonder about them is, are they hungry? They didn't look hungry in the finals in the first 3 games when they were down 2-1. They looked like they had already crowned themselves the champions, and then you know then Andre Iguodala happened, and everything changed, and that's why they're the defending champs. But you know, you start looking from 1 to 7, maybe, and every team that you see, you can make a case that they're legit and they could definitely win. Houston added Ty Lawson, they got him for nothing. The LA Clippers added Paul Pierce and a whole bunch of other really good bench players. You know, Pablo Prigioni is a pretty damn good guy to bring off the bench and be a pest for 10 minutes a night and to spell Chris Paul. Lance Stevenson, you don't know what you're going to get, but for a team that was playing 6.5 players in the playoffs last year, boy, did the Clippers really address their number one need. San Antonio, they're the favorite among the odds makers, but who's their center? Aaron Baines is gone. Thiago Splitter is gone. Tim Duncan is not a center. LaMarcus Aldridge is not a center. Bogdan Marjanovic is a rookie. You know, who knows what he's going to bring. You got to go up against the DeAndre Jordans and the Dwight Howards of the world in that conference. That's no easy task. And I think San Antonio still needs to go out and find a way to get themselves a center. They're going to be as good as they always are, but in a playoff matchup, is there going to be a big that can knock them out? I think that's the big question with them. And then Oklahoma City, you know, you can't discount a team that's got Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant playing with Enes Kanter. Those three never got to play together last year. And let's not forget Serge Ibaka as well. You know, that's 4 great pieces and a very strong starting lineup. And we saw Russell Westbrook look like the best player in the universe over the last month and a half of the season last year after the All-Star break, you know, putting up crazy numbers of triple-doubles. And look, Kevin Durant's back. And Kevin Durant, when healthy, is going to lead the league in scoring. That's all there is to it. If he stays healthy, Oklahoma City can finish number one in the West. But I think one real interesting thing to watch is if Oklahoma City – if they stumble and they're not where they want to be at the end of January, early February, don't be surprised if Jay-Z puts in a call to Sam Presti and says, you got to trade him. You got to trade my guy KD, because he's going to leave when he becomes a free agent. And if you don't trade him now, you're going to get nothing for him. So no team has more riding on this season than Oklahoma City does. And probably no executive has more riding on the season than Sam Presti does. And no coach has more pressure on him than Billy Donovan does. So Oklahoma City is a very, very interesting story. But if they stay healthy and they stay right, they could win the conference. They could have a better record than Golden State. And there's not a lot of people saying that, but I like that team at full strength.
Chris, before I move on to the other guys, I just got to ask you about that point. Kevin Durant, if Oklahoma City does not win a title this year, will he be playing for the Thunder next year?
No way. Absolutely not. He's gonna go out there and he's going to say, you know what? We could have had a dynasty. We could have had a dynasty. We had the best shooting guard in the league. We had James Harden, myself, and Russell. And ownership didn't want to pay the luxury tax. And so they went and traded James Harden for nothing. And they broke up our big three. They broke up what could have been a dynasty. And we should be counting the championship trophies on our mantle right now. And instead, we got none. And it's time for me to move on and have a fresh start with a franchise that cares more about winning than paying the luxury tax. And I could see Kevin Durant walking away from Oklahoma City and never looking back very easily. Now, if they win a championship, I think there's a very strong possibility he comes back and says, you know what, I want to get Russell to come back a year from now too when his contract is up, and I want to try to put together multiple titles. But you know, as things stand now, they made a disastrous, disastrous decision in giving away James Harden, a guy who got my MVP vote last year, and a guy who could have led them to multiple titles by now had they made the right decision at that time.
Coach Nick, I want to ask you about the Spurs. How do you see this LaMarcus Aldridge, David West front court tandem? We just heard Chris refer to them not having a center. How do you think that all plays out from coaching perspective?
Well, to address what Chris said about who's going to guard Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan, I could say it's pretty safe to say that the Spurs are not worried about having to guard them. I think that someone like David West can guard Dwight Howard and his poor footwork in the post. DeAndre Jordan's footwork or his post is non-existent as well. They have to be worried about the lobs, but these guys are smart and positional defenders, and Tim Duncan. So I don't think that they're worried at all about that. I think they're much more concerned with Houston as far as spraying the floor and guarding their shooters and all the speed they have now with a guy like Ty Lawson. So I think that's a non-factor. That said, I think that Houston is – they might be the dark horse favorite in my book to actually get to the finals. But, you know, the Spurs – and then the Spurs are going to pose their own issues with the, for the other team. So I would be very concerned for the rest of the Western Conference coming back, especially because when all is said and done, everyone's weighed in with their talent. They have Popovich on the bench. And even though I think he got a little bit tripped up on his own intelligence there with the hack of DeAndre, which I think ended up costing them that series, there's no question he's going to look at that and they're going to learn. They're going to figure that out. And I don't think he'll get out coached in this year.
So, Danny, if we assume that the Warriors, the Rockets, Clippers, Grizzlies, and Thunder all are going to make the Western Conference playoffs, can you give me another team that you would be sure is also going to get in?
I'm closest on New Orleans because I feel like the top six are there. But the challenge with them is, are they deep enough to withstand the injuries they already have? They're a good team. They're definitely, to me, in that group. They're one of the most talented teams. They have Anthony Davis, who is an elite individual player. I don't know that I would say like that I'm sure they're going to get in, but they're definitely the closest.
Chris, who do you think outside of the Warriors, Rockets, Clippers, Grizzlies, and Thunder is also a lock to make the Western Conference playoffs?
Well, if I would have knew who the lock was, I wouldn't be living in New York. I'd be living in Las Vegas and counting all my money. But if I think there's a team out there that everybody's sleeping on in the West that can crack the top eight, kind of like what New Orleans did last year, it's the Sacramento Kings. Great coach, George Karl. Just a great coach. Number one center in the NBA, in my book, in DeMarcus Cousins. Rajon Rondo's got a lot to prove and probably one more chance to get a big contract. You know, this guy was looking at a max deal going at 1 year ago when we were looking ahead to summer 15 free agency, and he ended up taking $9.5 million to go play for the Kings. He's got to restore his reputation. We know that when he plays at his peak, he's a player unlike anybody else at his position in the NBA. Can George Karl, you know, bring the best out of him? George Karl's done it with a lot of other players. They had a nice draft pick in Willie Cauley-Stein. I like that they have Kostas backing up DeMarcus Cousins. Rudy Gay, people don't realize that he had the best year of his career last year. The Sacramento Kings can very easily make the playoffs if they all play to their potential and they avoid the drama that comes with having players that are as volatile as Cousins and Rondo on their team. You know, one other guy I neglected to mention is Marco Bellinelli. Sacramento needed 3-point shooting. Bellinelli comes from a championship culture in San Antonio. You know, he could be in the race for most improved player this year if he's up in the high 30 minutes per game area. So keep an eye out on the Sacramento Kings. And if you do gamble and you really like the Sacramento Kings, you can get tremendous odds on them to win the Western Conference title this season.
Coach Nick, Kobe Bryant is too old and the rest of the Lakers are too young to do any damage in the West. Is this a true statement?
I think that, you know, damage could be a relative term. I've sort of enjoyed watching them in the preseason out here in L.A. And I love Jordan Clarkson. I think, you know, he is primed to become a really good combo guard. Kobe, it looked like Kobe for some of these moments. And if they really can keep him to, you know, he shouldn't, I don't think he should play more than 25 minutes a game. And if they can keep him anywhere around there, then he actually, I think, could help. I think Julius Randle is just a beast and should be a double-double machine. So, you know, they're gonna have those runs in each game where they're going to, like, you know, cause problems for teams. Will it sustain through 48 minutes? Will they win a lot of those games? Like, probably not. But I think at some point with those young legs, you know, in those March games, they might run up against one of these, you know, older teams that are supposed to be better, and they give them a real good run for their money in those little, you know, minor spurts that you see. So I think they're going to be entertaining. They're going to be fun. I mean, we just saw a really fun, great play that Byron Scott drew up on a fake handoff for Ryan Kelly on a dunk to win the game. I mean, you know, they almost blew it on a boneheaded play before that. But, you know, there's some excitement there, and I think that, you know, they're going to win. You know, they're going to win 30 games, I think.
All right, let's talk about another team that may not make the playoffs but have an exciting wing player as well, and that's the T-Wolves with Andrew Wiggins. Danny LaRue, Andrew Wiggins, is he ready to take that superstar step this year?
I don't think so, partially because he's young and partially because I think that the jump that you're talking about is normally considered an offensive one, not a defensive one. I think that he will be a much better defender this year. He's a very good athlete, and something that we've learned, especially with young guys going into the NBA, is that the knowledge that you get, especially with the veterans they have, that a year of that will help a lot. But offensively, he doesn't, to me, and this is true watching FIBA Americas as well, where he played for Team Canada, he doesn't have a jump shot that's reliable enough or a handle that's tight enough to become that level of player. But if we're willing to talk about him as, you know, a guy who can make a major impact on the defensive end and be better offensively, you know, maybe an early proto Kawhi Leonard type guy, if you consider that a step up, then he can absolutely do that. But I want to see the offensive game before I pronounce anything in terms of that sort of impact.
Nate Duncan, your thoughts on Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah, I agree with Danny. I think that this is going to be maybe kind of a consolidation year for Wiggins. And pretty much I totally parrot his points on this one. I think that we're not going to see him sort of in all-star contention, especially because his team's probably not going to be that good as well. They have a lot of talent there, but I don't think that they have quite the offensive intelligence or the spacing to really take a leap forward. And also that defensively, they're still going to struggle with so many young guys. So I don't see him kind of at the Derrick Rose second year, Anthony Davis second year. We're talking about him as maybe a lower rung all-star. I think it's going to take some more time for him if, in fact, he does get to that superstar level still.
Chris Sheridan, is there a young player in the league that you think is ready to take the jump to the superstar level that we haven't really been talking about?
Well, I think more and more people are going to come to see Anthony Davis as a true superstar. You know, here's a guy at that size who can handle the rock, who can shoot free throws at 80%. He's been working on his 3-point shot all summer. Anthony Davis can do it all. And he plays for a team that's fun to watch, but plays in a very small market and gets very little national exposure in the Pelicans. If the Pelicans can kind of fight off this early preseason injury bug and play as well as they played last year and be a playoff team, I think Anthony Davis, the sky's the limit as far as this guy getting better. But he can really do it all. And for a guy his size to be able to do it all, there aren't many like him. So I think Anthony Davis is gonna be a transformative player. Whether the public latches onto him the way they would latch onto a guy with maybe more personality like LeBron James, or a guy with more flair like Derrick Rose a few years back or Kyrie, I don't think that's going to happen. But as far as appreciation for skill level and the numbers that he'll put up, I think he's going to be number one, right in the top of the MVP consideration race this year, and number two, he's going to become a player that people, especially purists, recognize is almost a once-in-a-generation player.
Nate Duncan, who is your favorite player in the league who you don't think will make an all-star team this year?
I'm going to go with Marcus Smart of the Celtics. I love watching him defend. He's one of the best guard defenders to come out of college in a long time. He shot the ball much better last year than you would have expected, given what he did at Oklahoma State. He's made some real strides there with his form. And I think now, especially because he was derailed in the first half of the year with an ankle injury, I think that he can do a lot more in pick and roll and attack the basket more than we've seen from him. I think he's going to, especially just from a fun-to-watch standpoint defensively, someone I'm really going to enjoy this year.
Coach Nick, who runs the best stuff in the league and who runs the most predictable stuff?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you know, the list is a little bit long these days of who runs the best stuff because they're all sort of running the same good stuff. And it starts with, you know, the Warriors are right there. And we're going to do a big breakdown, by the way, so everyone should stay tuned because everyone's running action out of the triangle offense. And everyone wants to complain and say that the triangle offense is old and it's dead. But everybody has actions they run right out of that offense. And the Warriors are right there using a lot of dribble pitch and a lot of pinch post action to get terrific shots for their guys. And it's very clever. The Bulls are also, with what Hoiberg is doing, are running some really, really clever stuff. And I really enjoy watching that. And, of course, you have the Spurs, and then you have the Hawks, who are basically doing the Spurs stuff as well. So, you know, those are the highlights that jump out at me right away. And, you know, it's I don't think we've ever had, and certainly in the last, like, 15 years, sort of this many teams that run system offense that works with, you know, movement side to side, weak side action, dribble pitch, high post cutting. You know, it's really a pleasure.
Danny LaRue, can you tell me a huge roster move that we could expect to see this year?
I think that while they can't make a move right now because they don't know who's going to be healthy, if the Bulls can decide to move one of their front court pieces, that changes two teams potentially in the title picture because whoever they trade, whether it's Pau Gasol, who's on functionally an expiring contract because he's on a cheap deal and he has a player option, or Taj Gibson, or maybe even Joakim Noah, whoever of that they could conceptually move because they have so much depth there, that player, if they go on to another good team, which would be the expectation, they completely change that other team too. So I would say that because this is a year where I think we'll see a lot of teams want to stay close to the vest just because they'll be so optimistic about what they can do next summer, whether that is well-founded or poorly founded. But the Bulls, because some of those guys are on expiring contracts and they have so much talent, in February, they should be able to know that they can move one of them and totally change the title picture in two ways.
Chris Sheridan, how about for you? Same question. Huge roster move that we could expect to see this year.
I think it's got to come from Danny Ainge, who's sitting on so many draft picks and so much duplication at so many positions. You know, they got more point guards than they know what to do with. Marcus Smart's going to start, but Isaiah Thomas is a pretty good player in his own right. You know, how are you going to have those two guys coexist? They're bigs. David Lee and Amir Johnson came in. Jared Sullinger is a pretty decent player if he can keep his weight down. He might be a candidate to get moved because David Falk, his agent, is trying to get him a max contract. They got Tyler Zeller, Kelly Olynyk at the center position, and Danny has draft picks, you know, of the yin yang that he can move. So at a certain point, Danny wants to move, you know, a bushel full of players for a great player. And if there's a great player that becomes available over the course of the season, I think probably Danny is better equipped than any GM in the league to load up the wheelbarrow and say, here, take these four guys and these four picks, and I'll take on your disgruntled superstar.
Nate Duncan, I want to pose the same question for you. Can you make a prediction on a roster move we could see this year?
I agree with what Chris was saying, that Boston has the pieces to try and move. There are a lot of teams that are accumulating assets, the Sixers being another one who might want to trade for a superstar. I'm just not sure who that disgruntled superstar is. There was some thought that it might be DeMarcus Cousins, but I think with the Kings moving into a new building now, supposedly they're trying to patch things up. We'll see how that goes, but there's no way that they can trade a top 10 player in the league in Cousins to kind of start over when they're moving into a new building. I think they have to, and they still have him under contract for another 3 years after this one. So I think we'll probably be limited more to kind of deck shuffling moves along the lines as we saw at last year's free agent or trade deadline. Guys who are on the last years of their contracts but are on bad teams. You know, if the Hornets fall out of it, Nicholas Batum and Al Jefferson could be moved. Joe Johnson, I think, is more likely to get bought out than traded, but he could be an option as well for the Nets. Gerald Henderson in Portland. Roy Hibbert in LA, if they disappoint, he's someone who might be able to help a contender. They could move him. Zaza Pachulia in Dallas, same thing, especially if they try to tank to save their top seven protected pick that they owed to Boston from the Rajon Rondo trade. And then Evan Fournier is a guy who I think can help a team, but he's kind of backed up on the wing with some of the guys that they brought in Orlando and will be a restricted free agent. They could try to see if they can't get something for him as well. But I don't see any enormous moves happening at this year's trade deadline.
I want to get into some predictions right now and then give you each a chance to promote your own individual podcast. So let's run through some predictions. We'll go through each guy, take about 30 seconds to explain their answer. First up, Chris Sheridan, I want to start with you. NBA Finals matchup, your prediction is?
Cleveland Cavaliers against the Golden State Warriors, rematch. Why? Because Golden State won 67 games last year. Golden State brings back the same team, maybe a little bit improved, like I said, with Jason Thompson in there instead of David Lee. They killed teams last year, and they play in a very, very, very tough conference. They won 67 games, Blaine, in that beast of a conference, and they come back with the same team. Again, the question with them is, are they hungry? But if they are, I think Golden State, you can't really pick against them at this point. And as I said earlier in the podcast, Cleveland has no competition, so Cleveland's getting there too.
Nate Duncan?
I'm going to agree with Chris. Cleveland, Golden State, my number two in the West would be Oklahoma City. When we get to the next question, I might explain a little bit more about why I think Oklahoma City is going to be awesome this year.
That's perfect. Danny LaRue, go ahead.
Same finals. I think that Cleveland is by far the class of the East. I don't think they even need to have a full roster to beat everybody else there, just like they didn't have to last year. And the Warriors are not only the best regular season team, but they are a team that is very hard to knock out in a seven-game series because there's so many different variants that they can throw at you. And something we saw last year is that once they figure a team out, they generally can wipe them out pretty cleanly. They looked rough early in series, and I don't see any reason to expect that to change, especially when so many of the other teams have more turmoil.
And Coach Nick, for you, NBA Finals matchup.
I mean, there's an awful lot of disrespect going on in the East, especially for the Bulls here, if you're going to dismiss them. And so I'm going to be the iconoclast here and say that the Bulls do match up pretty well with the Cavs. And if they could figure out their rotations well enough, they could easily beat them. I don't think that that's so clear cut at all. And so I'll just say the Bulls can make it to the finals, and I'm going to go with the Rockets. I'm really, really intrigued by what I see with Ty Lawson and how he's being able to take away so much of that pressure that James Harden had to deal with being the sole focal point of that offense. And we've seen them. They don't give up. They are well coached, ultimately, and I think they're going to make it to the finals.
I like contrarian Nick, maybe even more than Coach Nick. I like that. Chris Sheridan, MVP and your MVP runner-up, and why?
Boy, good question. I think James Harden, kind of echoing something the coach said, is with Ty Lawson taking away some of the ball handling chores from him, his turnovers are going to go down. But he's still going to have the ball in his hands an awful lot, and he's going to be in better position to score. I think James Harden is primed for an MVP season. I think he can put up the same kind of numbers he put up last year, and if he cuts down on the turnovers and Houston finishes somewhere north of 60 wins, I think James Harden can be the MVP this year. Runner-up, I got to give to LeBron James because I think his team's going to win 62 games. I think they're somewhere around 62-20. He's the best player on the planet, and he's also the second best player on the planet. But guys kind of get tired of voting for the same guy over and over again. So but right now, I'd say Harden and LeBron are my 1-2.
Okay, Nate Duncan, MVP and MVP runner-up.
Kevin Durant is my MVP. His 2014 was way better than what anyone did in 2015, although I was a big Steph Curry proponent and still am. He's my runner-up, but KD looks like he's back. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to be the runaway best player in the league. I think that LeBron has already lost a step last year. I thought his finals was a little bit overrated when you looked at both his own efficiency and what the Cavs did. They basically scored at a Sixers level rate in the finals. I think this is going to be the year that we stop saying that he's the best player in the world. I think Steph Curry is going to be my number two. He looks awesome so far in preseason. He has a pretty good health record since those ankle issues years ago. And, you know, I think the Warriors are going to be really good again. So that's Durant number one, Curry number two for me.
Wow, you're really going to fire up LeBron James. I spoke to a few reporters last year who told me that LeBron could not understand, despite missing a large chunk of the season, could not understand why Steph Curry won the MVP. It was baffling to him. Danny LaRue,
well, the
MVP.
Other reason I would say sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go
the other
ahead.
Reason I would say sorry, Adam, is that I don't think that he'll be in the mix. Is I think Cleveland's really going to struggle with just all the injuries that they have at the start of the year, and I think they probably are not going to get the number one seed in the regular season. So since it's a regular season award, I think that the Cavs are going to be a little bit below expectations. Maybe not even through LeBron's fault. And so that's another reason that I don't think he's going to be in the mix necessarily.
Well, great. I wasn't knocking your call, just saying that you might fire up King James. Danny LaRue, MVP and MVP runner-up for you.
I think LeBron wins the award partially because the MVP often does not go to the most deserving player, and LeBron's narrative is really easy. He's going to be the guy, especially because early in the year, if the Cavs outperform expectations, which I think they will, I think they'll be pretty solid without Kyrie, even though Kyrie's a wonderful player. And number two, it's a dogfight. There's a treasure trove of guys. Right now, I'm leaning towards Stephen Curry. He is the best offensive player in the league. He's a dominant force, and the Warriors are going to be really good. So I think that he's there, and I'll put them second. The other player that I think is going to get a lot of buzz is Anthony Davis, because his counting stats and all of those numbers will be good, and his narrative is also good because he is the alpha and the omega with that team, which is something you always look for in an MVP. He's the most famous player. He's the best player. But it's really hard to give the MVP to a guy on a team probably in the bottom four of the playoffs when there are talented MVP candidates on the top teams in the West.
Okay, and Coach Nick, for you, MVP and MVP runner-up.
I was about to have the Anthony Davis pick when no one else had said. I thought maybe I was going to be the one guy. So I guess I'm lucky in my order. I think that Anthony Davis, without question, could be that guy that carries the team. And if they get anything above expectation, right, then I think that gets them right into the conversation for number one. That's the narrative that people might like, which is the other thing, which is hard to, you know, it's hard to repeat. I guess we saw Nash do it as that from the guard spot. So I suppose Curry could do it. But I don't know, like, can't we think – and by the way, one problem they have with OKC is that they cancel each other out. So either Westbrook – the only reason why Durant won it was because Westbrook was injured for a lot of that season. He was able to do what he could do. But I think that the Clippers – I think that maybe Blake Griffin I don't know. My memory is short. So what I remember is him last night destroying the team in the first quarter. And everything looks good, and he can do a lot of things out there. So why can't we have him in that discussion for, like, the second or the third place in the MVP voting?
Sure, why not? And just so we can get this moving along, just the name, your rookie of the year, Chris Sheridan?
Either Stanley Johnson or Emmanuel Mudiay. Stanley, if the Pistons make the playoffs.
Nate Duncan?
Karl Towns will be the best rookie, but the person who will win it will be Jahlil Okafor.
Okay, Danny LaRue?
Jahlil Okafor.
And Coach Nick?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess I'll say Okafor.
I thought you guys were great today. I really want you just to have a chance now. Just explain your podcast and, you know, in a brief way, but tell us a little bit about what people are going to get to hear on your individual podcast. Chris Sheridan, we could start with you, the Sheridan Hoops Radio Podcast.
Sure, Adam. You know, I go on radio stations all over the country. I go on national broadcasts, and I post those to Blog Talk Radio as my podcast. So when you go to Sheridan Hoops and you click on podcasts, you have a good chance of me being on in any one of the 30 NBA markets or talking general NBA stuff with a national outlet. So you'll get a little bit of everything on my podcast, and you'll get my insight. I've been covering the league for 25 years. I just turned 50 this year, so I think I've got another 25 years left in me, and hopefully my insight is on target.
Nate Duncan, host of the Dunked On podcast, what can we expect to hear?
Well, so we do a lot of salary cap analysis, really detailed breakdowns. During the season, we record really late at night, Pacific time, so it's there for you for your commute the next morning. 5 days a week is going to be the goal this year. Danny is also on as a frequent co-host as well, so you can hear him on there. And we just try to be the most in-depth NBA podcast that's out there.
Awesome. Danny LaRue, your Real GM podcast?
Yeah, so Real GM Radio is a weekly podcast, and I try to go in-depth with a single guest, and we talk about what is going on, but also what is going ahead, and try to have a full conversation, try to do an hour or so that goes into some depth on a real issue and that is different from anything you'll hear anywhere else.
And Coach Nick, B-Ball Breakdown Podcast.
Well, you know, coming from a coach's perspective, when I do my stuff, we'll have guys. I just had, actually Spencer Dinwiddie on the show. So we're going to get some NBA guys, players, to talk about the fundamentals, which is a real interesting conversation that you don't often hear. And then we get coaches and we get, beat writers and national guys on to talk about the in-depth stuff as well. And then also, as part of my umbrella, we have Snotty Drippin, who is, you might remember him from the Temecula incident on Twitter, who also does a podcast on our show. And it's a much more of a free-flowing, entertaining podcast. So we have a nice variance going on there.
I'm Adam Stegel. I host the Great Point podcast, and I'm hoping to get you all on as guests. I have coaches, players, analysts, and do some in-depth interviews and really try to get to know how people got started in the world of basketball, what their influences were, and really tell some great stories. So I'm hoping to get each of you guys on. You were all terrific today, and you're all very talented, so I think you should all be pleased with what we put out thus far. Guys, any other last comments from you?
Sure, and I'll go first. It's an interesting season in that there's not a dominant preseason storyline. Of course, nothing like what we had last year with the Cavs getting LeBron back. So it's going to be interesting to see what becomes the thing that people want to talk about. And we're not going to be able to say this for much longer, but I'll say it now. Watch out for Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant's one of the best players I've ever seen play the game. He's right up there with Michael Jordan. I don't think he's finished. And if he's playing anywhere near 30 to 32 minutes a night, I think he can be up there, maybe not in contention for the scoring title, but as a guy who's putting up 24, 25 points a game. And people love to talk about the Lakers. They love it more than maybe any other team in the whole NBA. And I think we'll be talking about Kobe Bryant more this year than maybe a lot of people are predicting this preseason.
Awesome. Nate Duncan, any final thoughts from you?
I can't wait to watch Oklahoma City and Golden State play against each other. That's going to be amazing.
Danny LaRue?
I love the balance that we have at the top this year and that all of these teams, especially if Cleveland can progress offensively, they're really fun to watch. And so there's a reason to follow every team this year. I think that if you're a league pass aficionado, this will be one of the best years in the last decade to follow the entire NBA. But once we get to the playoffs, the top end is going to be incredible as well.
And Coach Nick Houselman, how about for you?
I got my eye on Cleveland, but for the other reasons, because I want to see how the David Blatt, LeBron James relationship progresses, because, you know, we've seen and heard all sorts of interesting things about how negative it was. And I don't know if it's improved or not. And I think that could ultimately hold them back if they can't get on the same page.
Well, I love it all. You guys have been awesome. It's been terrific. Follow Chris Sheridan at Sheridan Hoops. Follow Nate Duncan at Nate Duncan NBA. Follow Danny LaRue at Danny LaRue, LeRoux. And follow Coach Nick at B-Ball Breakdown. And you can follow me, Adam Stanko, at Naismith Lives. Guys, it's been a blast, and hopefully we can do it again soon.